KBSI in the world. I'm John Batchelor. The President of the United States, a re-election campaign launched. And in a conversation at a recent private event with three Syrian activists, we learned something about the immediate future of the Biden administration and, in the event of a second term, the president's ambition to, in some fashion, contribute to solving the darkness visible that is the collapse of the Syrian state. I welcome Josh Rogan, who writes global opinions for The Washington Post, who introduces to me to this event that took place in Maryland in late June. Josh, a very good evening to you. The remark by the Syrian American from Massachusetts, Allah Tello, Assad must go. How did the president respond? Everything is nuanced. Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. Well, yes, now that the president is campaigning again in earnest, he's coming into contact with a lot of regular Americans, particularly those who are willing to pony up enough cash to get into one of his fundraiser dinners. And that's what happened June 27th in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Three Syrian activists attended a campaign event fundraiser. And what happens is you get into a photo line with the president. And while you're getting your photo taken, you have 30 seconds or so to chat him up. And then if he's really interested, you might get another 30 seconds. Well, these three Syrian activists made the most out of their ticket. And they talked to him about Syria for a really long time. And basically what they said to him is, listen, we need more U.S. involvement, not necessarily militarily involvement. We need more diplomacy. We need more humanitarian aid. And then one of them said, Assad must go. And President Biden said, I agree. Now, to the activists who relayed the story to me afterwards, that seemed to be a clear indication, amongst others, that President Biden still is following the Syria crisis, first of all, and still believes in what he said he believed in when it started, when he was vice president in 2011, 12 years ago, which is that Assad must go. Now, unfortunately, at least for the Syrians, that has nothing to do with what's going on with his own policy. And what's actually happening is that the Biden administration is looking the other way while Arab Gulf countries rehabilitate Assad and welcome him back into the warm arms of the diplomatic community. And that runs against our stated policy, that runs against U.S. law, which is supposed to sanction anybody who helps Assad until or unless he stops his atrocities. But the Biden administration just doesn't really want to do anything about it. So therein lies the contradiction. The president seems to care a lot about Syria and his administration doesn't.
The part where it gets really edgy is when the speakers, the Syrian American speakers, connect Syria, Russia, and Ukraine. How did they do it? What is your understanding of the remarks?
Right. It's long been an argument of the Syrian opposition, and this is an argument that I agree with, that Russian President Vladimir Putin sharpened his atrocity skills and trained all of his weapons that he's using in Ukraine now. First in Syria for years and years and years, just testing all sorts of cruelty that he's now visiting upon Ukrainians today. And secondly, they argue that if we had stood up to Russia's atrocities in Syria, perhaps he wouldn't have tried it in Ukraine. And of course, we'll never know. But I think that's a convincing argument nonetheless. And what the president said to these activists is that we're not going to let him get away with it again. In other words, we're going to stop him now in Ukraine. That's a reflection of Biden's belief, according to people that I talked to, that stopping Putin in Ukraine is crucial to making sure he doesn't become more aggressive in Europe and spark World War III between Russia and NATO. But that's of little comfort to Syrians who are still undergoing the Russian atrocities, even as recently as last week.
What is the Assad regime anti-normalization act and where is it?
Right. So Congress and, has always had a different Syria policy than the administration. It's really been bipartisan. Again, standing up for the Syrian opposition because these are the people that they interact with. And they've tried a bunch of bills, including sanctions bills, but most of them have been ignored. And what this bill would do is it would require the president to punish anyone who aids in the Assad regime's rehabilitation or gives the Assad regime money or helps them do any of their shady businesses. Now, that's technically already the law, but this would actually tighten up some loopholes. And moreover, it's just an expression that there are at least 30 bipartisan members of Congress who still care about Syria, which is a lot, but apparently not enough.
Hong Kong. Hong Kong was crushed by the mainland Chinese security forces and is under the boot of a national security law that threatens everyone with abuse, including Jimmy Lai, who is essentially jailed for the remainder of his life because he spoke the truth and represented the people of Hong Kong for many years, especially remembering Tiananmen. However, right now, the Hong Kong national security law and the apparatus I learned from Josh's column is not content with brutalizing people living in Hong Kong around the mainland. It's reaching out to intimidate overseas. Sheep Village, where is that, Josh, and what happened?
Right. Well, you know, here we have Hong Kong, yet another forgotten crisis, yet another place where peaceful protesters took to the streets to demand basic dignity and basic rights that they were promised and were gunned down by the dictatorship that seeks to control them. And, you know, that started in 2019. Here we are 4 years later, and Hong Kongers, 1,500 of them are political prisoners, including Jimmy Lai, who led the biggest independent media, which has now been shut down. But a lot of Hong Kong activists have fled, and a lot of them are living in exile, and they're trying to keep their movement alive, and they're trying to tell their story. And one of the ways they do that is with children's books. And Sheep Village is a set of children's books written by the activists to explain to anyone what really happened in Hong Kong as the Chinese Communist Party and the Hong Kong authorities try to send that history down the memory hole. And what the Chinese did is they protested and they threatened some Scottish church just for hosting an event, you know, 10,000 miles away from Hong Kong for a children's book. They threatened the church. They didn't know what to do, so they backed down. And that's how the Hong Kong authorities and the Chinese government are extending their long arm of transnational repression, trying not only to control what you think and say and do in Hong Kong, but trying to control what we think and say and do in our free societies. And that's a bridge too far, at least in my opinion.
So what we now know here and there is that the Chinese state security is intimidating, not seeking to intimidate, it is intimidating anyone who speaks out in favor of Hong Kong, the Hong Kongers, the protests, Jimmy Lai. Do we have information that it's happening in the United States, Josh, or is it all underground?
Yes, I have many friends from the Hong Kong community who now live in the United States and in Europe who tell me that their families back in Hong Kong face daily intimidation, that they can't call their parents for fear that they're going to get their parents arrested. And now we have bounties, $1 million Hong Kong dollars, but still $1 million bounties on eight of these activists. The Chinese government has tried to abuse Interpol and other international law enforcement practices, such as putting police stations in lots of countries without telling them that they're putting Chinese police stations there. That's meant to harass Hong Kongers, but also Tibetans and Uyghurs and regular Chinese dissidents who refuse to shut up. And, you know, this is something that if we want to have freedom of speech and freedom of religion and freedom of the press in our own countries that we can't stand for, but our system, our current governments are not sophisticated enough to understand, much less counteract this threat. And that's what the Chinese government is taking advantage of. They're manipulating our democracies in order to protect their atrocities.
We read that Janet Yellen, the Secretary of the Treasury, is in China to negotiate in some fashion about the economy. We know the Secretary Blinken was there looking to establish a status quo ante with China. At any point, and there might be a visit by other cabinet officials, at any point, do these matters about Hong Kong come up in the conversation? And does the administration have a policy when Jimmy Lai is the question?
At this point in the Biden administration, the White House is so focused on slowing down or the downfall of the increasingly negative pace of U.S.-China relations that they've self-censored on many of these issues, and they've pulled back on many of these competitive actions to let the Chinese government know that there are consequences when they do bad stuff. And they'll put out perfunctory statements and tweets when anniversaries of these atrocities inevitably come up. But there's not much more than that. And, you know, that has a real effect on the not only the morale, but also the safety of Hong Kongers, not just inside Hong Kong, but around the world, because something as simple as the United States standing behind them, the United States government standing behind them, can mean the difference between life and death, between freedom and imprisonment, between them being able to live with dignity and know their families are not. So I think it's really unfortunate that the Biden administration is prioritizing high-level dialogue with Beijing over sticking to American values and protecting American interests. But I'd be lying if I said that was the first administration to do that.
Josh Rogan, Washington Post. I'm John Beck.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.